I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. A lot of times when we talk about long-distance hiking, we think of the wilderness. You know, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, these really long backcountry adventures where you're out in the woods for weeks or months on end, and you sleep in a tent every night, and you carry everything you need on your back. But long-distance journeys don't have to be like that. Today, we're going to hear about a very different kind of walk. It's a walk that follows an ancient pilgrimage route in Europe called the Camino de Santiago. Back in the Middle Ages, the church claimed they discovered the remains of one of Jesus' disciples in this town in northern Spain, and so people started making pilgrimages to the site. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, came from all over Europe. Fast forward to today, and the pilgrimage route is hugely popular again. And that brings us to our guest for today. A few years ago, a woman from Seattle named Beth Jacino decided to do the Camino with her husband. And if you have in your mind the kind of person who would do a pilgrimage like this, Beth is probably not who you're thinking of. She was not outdoorsy, she was not religious, and yet something drew her to this trek. She wrote a book about it called Walking to the End of the World, and she joins us today to talk about it. Beth, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
So one thing that was interesting to me, so a lot of people, I think, who do long journeys, like I'm thinking people who choose to do through hikes on like the Appalachian Trail, a lot of people do it because they are grappling with major issues in their lives, whether that's, you know, romantic disappointment or career questions, or maybe they are dealing with loss of a loved one. But it sounds like for you, that was not the case. So I'm curious what what made you want to do this thousand mile long trek?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. I think in the days of Cheryl Strayed and Wild and some of these books, the idea of you're journeying with a purpose, an internal purpose, has become really popular. Honestly, though, I didn't have some grand story that was part of this as much as I had 20 years of postmodern adulting burnout. I mean, we were in our late 30s. We'd been working full time since we were in school. We'd never really taken—
This is you and your husband.
This is me and my husband, Eric. We had never done the gap year after college. We had never really traveled. And we were at the point where there was just so much coming at us. We didn't want to upend everything. We live in Seattle. We live in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. We had good jobs that we really appreciated. We had great friends. We have a great community. We didn't want to just give everything up, but we needed to take a break. We needed to take a breather. I was running my own business. I had four different email accounts. I had this calendar that was constantly color-coded and beeping and chiming. I couldn't get from my apartment to my car without checking social media to see if I had missed something. And so we were kind of at that point of saying, we have to do something. We just need a reset. We need a sabbatical. And about that time, I found out about the Camino from someone I worked with who had done just that last 5 days, that last 100 kilometers of walking. And I started researching, and it just clicked all the buttons for me. What I was looking for was a chance to unplug and to be part of something that was bigger than me. And a 1,000-year-old trail that had that kind of lasting power, that had that kind of history, that would get me outside, that would get me out of my comfort zone without getting me so far out of my comfort zone, sounded like such a great idea.
So this is interesting, like the idea of wanting to be part of something bigger than yourself.
Yes.
Because as you've said, this is not just a trail, it is a pilgrimage route. It's got historical and religious significance to it, really. Mm-hmm. And the people who walk this trail are referred to as pilgrims, even those who are not particularly religious themselves, which I understand was the case for you.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a word that I struggled to understand my place within that part of the story. Before we left, people would say, oh, where are you going? What are you doing? You're leaving for 3 months. And I would very intentionally not use the word pilgrimage. I would very intentionally not use the word pilgrim because it had this religious connotation. Here in the United States, here in my, secular world, it seemed awkward to try to say that. It seemed like it was trying to put me in this place of, oh, I'm going on a trip of penitence, or I'm going on a, I kind of pictured myself on my knees beating myself in the back or something that just wasn't me.
Right.
And so when I went, I was, I'm going on a long distance walk. I'm going on a historical walk. I kept trying to find my way around this. And we got to France. We started in a town called Le Puy-en-Velay in south central France. And you walk into this medieval village that looks like it probably did. Parts of it look like it did 800, 900 years ago. And you start the walk in this grand cathedral that has been there since before anything. And in those early morning hours, there's this like dawn mass that people gather at, and you realize that you're becoming part of that walk that has been there for so long. And we spent
you went to this mass even though you weren't doing this for religious reasons.
I did, because I think that you can't separate what I discovered is you can't separate the history of the trail and the history of the church and the history of Christian history from what is going on around you. And so I am a 21st century secular person on a 10th century originally religiously intended trail. It's a historical connection, not necessarily a spiritual one. But I think if I'm going to experience what it's like to be part of this history, that means going to the cathedrals. That means being part of that experience, even as an observer.
So, but you did get to as you said, you got to the point where you did start referring to yourself as a pilgrim, even though ahead of time you hadn't used that word.
Yes.
You do get to that point.
And that happened pretty quickly.
Did you ever feel like an imposter?
I don't think so, because I think when I got there and I started walking, when I put myself into the place where this history had happened, the word pilgrimage suddenly made more sense to me. So in a place where, in the United States, in Seattle, in a place where, none of our buildings are older than 100 years old, pilgrimage feels archaic. In a place where you're walking through the countryside of France along, and you're passing these chapels and you're walking on these roads and you're seeing these monasteries where people have served the people who are walking for so long, you become part of that story. And becoming part of that story meant becoming a pilgrim. Pilgrimage for me became a word that meant less a religious connotation and more of I am on a personal journey. I am taking time for myself to process through, to experience. I've removed myself from society, of my community, in order to go forward and see what this is like.
So how does this work on a practical level? I mean, this is not like, one of the wilderness long trails in the U.S. where you're carrying your tent and you're, sleeping out in the woods every night.
Right.
Because you're actually walking through all these little towns and staying in towns at night. So like, what's a typical day like? I'm picturing you walking along all day and then drinking wine all evening.
That's not far from the truth. So the nice thing about what I discovered about long trails in Europe compared to long trails in the United States is, here in the U.S., I think we treat our long trails as sport. They're about the physical experience, first and foremost. And I think in Europe, they treat long trails as holidays. And so you wake up in a bed is probably the first difference. You're staying in guest houses all the way through, and they could be inexpensive hiker hostels where you pay €5 a night for a bunk bed and a shower and access to a kitchen and all of those things. And so you wake up and you start walking, and you walk for, you know, we would walk for an hour or two and stop in the first town that we came through for coffee and croissants. And then we would walk for another few hours, and you're walking through all kinds of different territory. So some days you're in open countryside. Some days you're walking through cattle fields. Some days you're walking over mountains. Some days you're walking through cities. We went through cities in Spain that were, you know, up to 200, 300,000 people. And so you're navigating suburbs. You're walking across the country and seeing all of the parts of it, not just the parks, not just the rural, not just the mountains. And so you'd walk, we would walk on average for 12 to 15 miles a day and stopping a couple of times along the way, and then get to the place that we had decided we were going to stay for the evening, find our next guest house, find our next hostel, get checked in, do the things, as Eric always said. You get your bed, you wash your clothes in the sink, you get your shower, you get yourself settled. And then, yeah, like you said, we went out and explored. We would see what was in the town. We would stop and have a glass of wine or two. And eventually, at the end of the day, usually there were these big communal dinners. And so people would come together often in the guest houses. They would provide a meal as well as the beds. And so you would sit around tables with people from all over the world. And these are what become your, what we call the Camino family of people of all ages, all backgrounds, all regions of the world, and have these fantastic conversations and get to know people. And so it was a very social experience as well as a very physical one.
It sounds kind of wonderful.
It is pretty darn magical. I've been back twice since the story that was told in this book. I keep needing to go back and reset myself.
So one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting to me, and this struck a chord because I tend to be this way too, is you describe yourself as being very much a planner in that you like to like figure out what's going to happen ahead of time and then like make it happen. And that is very much me as well. But how did that work out for you on the Camino?
It didn't. actually, no, this was one of the real lessons of the experience for me. And I had knew that going in, that this was going to be a challenge for someone who likes to be prepared for what's coming next. I like to know what to expect. If I make a hotel reservation online, I like to look at all the pictures and all of the reviews so I know what my room will look like. You know, I am that kind
totally.
Of planner.
Yep. I get it.
And I threw myself intentionally into a situation where I am changing location every day. I am walking into a new, unpredictable situation every day. And so even if I looked in the guest book and I chose the name of a guest house, or I chose a town based on a map and said, okay, here's where we're going to stop, I have no idea what's going to happen there. It could be, you know, we would stop in a town and discover that our guest house was really six cots in the basement of an old moldy community hall, and I was cleaner than the bathrooms. And the next day we would stop and, you know, the same kind of listing in the book, the same price point, and realize that we were in this amazing renovated monastery that had big open gardens and free washers and dryers and private bathrooms and just luxury. And so I planned probably as much as I could. I kept looking at the book. I kept talking to people. But one of the real lessons of this is what Eric always calls practicing acceptance. whatever happens, wherever, whatever surprises we find, remember that this too shall pass. We're leaving tomorrow. Whatever rude service I've gotten in a bar or restaurant, whatever thing that people have said to me, whatever uncomfortable moment I find myself in, I'm leaving tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll have a new adventure, and tomorrow we'll have a new experience. And I'm glad that we took this trip for as long as we did. I'm glad that we went for 79 days, because it took that long to unpeel my fingers one by one from my need to try to plan and control. And by the end of the trip, it was easier than it was at the beginning to just say, okay, what's going to happen? What will be the surprise? Let's treat this like a game.
Oh, I like that. Let's treat this like a game. That's really nice. Did you find that it rubbed off into your regular life? Like, after you were done with the Camino and you went back home to Seattle, did you find that you were more flexible about things, or did you go back? Because I feel like that's something I struggle with. It's like, oh, you put yourself into a totally new environment, and finally you get rid of this, you know, compulsive need to plan everything. Mm-hmm. But then you go back to normal life and it's like, oh, you just, your tendencies come back. So I'm curious how much of it lasted for you.
Yeah, I always say that we came back to the same jobs, the same apartment, the same cell phone plan with the same data usage. I brought home certain things. I brought home more of an awareness of how important it is to be present, to not always be planning the next thing, to not always be thinking about the future. I don't always live that out well. I still get just as caught up in my calendars. This fall has been dreadful as far as overcommitting and overscheduling and not being able to put it all down. But I recognize it more in myself now. I recognize the need to take myself out of those situations. So I can't take a 3-month sabbatical, but this week, Eric and I went away for 4 days and turned off our phones and turned off the Wi-Fi and stayed in a little cabin in the woods near home and just went outside and walked every day. And so it's a balancing act, and it's a constant balancing act. I think that we learned a lot about our own habits, but we still brought them home. Wherever you go, you're still there. And yeah. So, like I said, we have been back. I've been back twice since then. I kind of start to
see... To the Camino.
Yeah, to the Camino specifically. But to this idea of long distance walking is becoming part of who I think I'm going to be. European style. I will continue to search out the places that give me beds and bathrooms.
Well, and that was going to be something that I was going to ask you about, actually, because, you know, when you started this walk, you describe yourself in your book as not being particularly outdoorsy. And like, you know, you were not the person who was going on long hikes and whatnot.
And yet you decided to do this. I would avoid the word hiking. Even when we started talking about the Camino, I would say it was a walk, because I don't have any... I don't sport. I think yoga is an extreme sport. I'm a city person. I've always lived in a place with streetlights. And I would prefer being on my couch with my cat and a book than I would be anywhere else in the world. And so I've always been somebody who has to kind of seek out motivation to be active in any way. And I've always said, well, walking isn't really sport. Walking isn't really exercise. But I would just
even
walk
when
around
it's 15 miles a day.
yeah. I didn't think that one through very well. But so I was always of the opinion of like, oh, it's just walking, it's fine. And I really intentionally, I think, didn't think it through. I just kind of impulsively made a decision that this is what we were going to do and said, it'll be fine. I didn't pack my backpack. I never did a training hike. I never put my backpack on until the day that we left for the airport. Because that idea of what I was signing up for was kind of terrifying. And so I just avoided it.
What scared you most about it?
I think that the idea of being that far out of my comfort zone, of sharing rooms with strangers, of walking that far, because I'm not an outdoor person, right? I'm not a hiker. I'm not a backpacker. I didn't own a sleeping bag when we started this process. I had never done anything that was this big. And so when I looked at it as I'm going to walk 1,000 miles, I'm going to walk over the Pyrenees Mountains, I would just tense up. I would just freeze up because that seemed so enormous. And what I learned was you don't think about it in terms of the 1,000 miles. You don't think about it in terms of the what happens, what's going to happen. You think, tomorrow, I'm going to walk 20 kilometers. I walked 20 kilometers today. I can do that again tomorrow. Okay. And you just take it one day at a time. But the possibility that I couldn't do this, and I think I've heard this from a lot of other long distance walkers, long distance through hikers. It's that sense of, what if I don't make it? I've told people I'm going to do this thing. What if I can't? What if I have to come home? And that fear was huge. That fear of, I've set myself up for something that might be impossible.
It almost goes back to this same idea of planning and following through and not being sure that you're going to be able to stick to your plan.
Yeah. When any of us look at a big project, a big undertaking, there's always that sense of, what if I don't make it? What if I have to go home and say I failed? And yeah. I think that people don't take on giant projects like this or giant adventures because of that fear of failure, because it just seems so, when you say, I'm going to go walk 1,000 miles, it seems like such an enormous undertaking. And part of it is getting past the fear of what, of just saying, I'm going to do it.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break for a moment. When we come back, what is it actually like to leave your responsibilities behind for so long? And how does it change you when you stop interacting with people over the phone or the internet for months on end? We'll get to all of that in a moment, but first, a word from our sponsor. Support for this episode comes from Thrive Market, making healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. Thrive Market is an online store that sells the same kinds of organic products that you could find at, let's say, Whole Foods, but for less money. You can get everything from healthy snacks to beauty products to wine, all shipped straight to your door, and prices are up to 30% less than retail. Speaking of shipping, Thrive Market is committed to zero waste, so all their packaging, boxes, etc. are made from recycled paper and are themselves recyclable. Because you're listening to this podcast, Thrive Market has a special deal for you. You can take 25% off your first order and get a 30-day free trial when you go to thrivemarket.com/out there. That's thrivemarket.com/out there. And keep in mind, Thrive Market's prices are already up to 30% off retail. With this deal, you get an additional 25% off your first order. So pretty big savings. Again, that's all at thrivemarket.com/out there. And as always, we have a link to that on our website. And now, back to our conversation with author Beth Jacino.
Once you come home and you say, I just walked 1,000 miles, I can look at a globe and show you the place where I started and the place where I finished in one shot. There's a certain amount of confidence that comes with that. There's a certain amount of, I am much more likely now to not only go for a hike, but to travel to places that I'm not comfortable with, to take on professional projects that are scary, that are big, because I know now what it's like to sign up for something that I can't see the end of and get to that place.
And you know that there are going to be really tough moments in it, but like you have the tenacity to get through them.
Right. I'm going to sit on a rock in the middle of a field in France and take my shoes off and cry because I think I can never walk another single step. And I'm going to then realize that there's no way out other than stealing one of the donkeys. And so I'm going to put my shoes back on and I'm going to keep walking because that's the option. You keep plugging through. And I think that's the thing about long distance walking is that there are these high moments. There are these magical mountaintop moments. But there's a lot of long distance walking through hiking that is just put one foot in front of the other and keep doing it. And every day there would be some kind of surprise that would make it worth it. Every day there would be a gorgeous sunrise or an interesting conversation or
a chocolate croissant.
a chocolate croissant or a beer at the end of the day. Or, I think one of my hardest days, we had left a town and didn't realize that it was a holiday and that everything was closed. And so we had been walking for like 5 hours and I hadn't had coffee and I hadn't had food and I was cranky and I didn't want to do this anymore. And then around the corner comes someone we had met 3 weeks earlier, didn't think we would ever see him again. And he just happens to be in the same place at the same time, like he had caught up with us or we had caught up with him. And then we had this incredible afternoon. That entire day turned around. And we had this incredible afternoon of catching up. And we went swimming in a river. And, by the end of a day that starts miserable, you're absolutely convinced that this is exactly what you want to do for the rest of your life. And so learning that those moments are always going to come, being prepared. I like to say it's because I'm the preparation type. I'm prepared for surprises now. I'm prepared for every situation to turn around.
Oh, I love that. So, do you feel like your time away from technology did what you wanted it to do? I mean, did that pan out? The sort of forced off time from email and screens and all that?
I think the forced off time was incredible for a couple of reasons. One, it was a good reminder that I am not indispensable. I think that we, in this era, have a hard time, even when we travel, letting go of what's going on at home. People always need to be connected, right? Well, what if somebody calls? Well, what if somebody needs me? Well, I can't, my pet sitter might have a question, whatever that is. And making the intentional decision to say, I'm not available. Whatever your issue is at work, you'll figure it out. Whatever your issue is with family, you'll figure it out. I'll be in touch when I get back. And learning that that works. People solve their own problems if you're not there. People work out their own stuff. And that was an enormous lesson I learned just in my willingness. I'm much more willing now to turn off the internet, to turn off communications, even just for a day or 2 days if I have a project I'm working on, because there is no emergency that someone else can't solve. I think the other thing was realizing that it is really easy to slip back into it. I'm not, I would love to have come back and been like, oh no, I have these amazing boundaries and I turn off everything at 8 o'clock at night and I sit around the fireplace and, read books out
loud. We know that's not the case because I've gotten emails from you past 8 o'clock at night.
Exactly. No, I am just as attached as ever on a day-to-day basis. And it's something I intentionally have to keep pulling back from. The key is this idea of being present. It's not like the internet is bad. It's not like being online is bad. It's not like social media is bad. It's when it distracts you so much from the people who are right in front of you. It's when it distracts you so much from that conversation that is happening. I think one of the most incredible experiences of the Camino was my entire life was what was right in front of me at any given moment. And so I was walking through this countryside without any distractions. I didn't have a timetable. I didn't have to catch a train. I didn't have to be anywhere. I didn't have a phone beeping at me with people in other countries or other cities telling me things. The only thing that mattered was what I could see and the people who I could see, the people who I could talk to. And so those conversations around tables at the end of the day were really meaningful because they were the only people who were part of my life right then. And that sense, that's probably the thing, the more I talk to you, that's probably the thing I brought back, is I'm much more likely to put the phone away and pay attention when there are people with me, or pay attention when I'm outside, or whatever I'm doing, can I not let this other thing be a distraction?
Do you think you could have gotten the benefits that you got from this without going on a pilgrimage, without going on a long walk? Or, I mean, could you have just said, hey, I'm going to take a break from technology and go, like, hang out on the beach for 3 months? Or is there something fundamental about sort of putting yourself through the rigors of a really long physical journey that kind of gives you the space you need to recharge and forces you to be present?
I don't think you could have the same experience sitting on a beach. I think that a lot of what comes out of this is the sense of the journey. If you're sitting on the beach, you don't know what your body is capable of moving you forward and how that's going to happen. If you're walking, you're relying on yourself to accomplish a task. There was still a task in front of me. I was still headed for the Atlantic Ocean, and I wasn't going to stop until I got there. And that's part of what pilgrimage is, I think. That's part of, I have given myself a task to accomplish, and I've given myself a lot of mental space to process things while I am doing that task.
Hmm. So what do you hope readers will take away from your book?
I want readers to walk away and be inspired to find an adventure of their own. I really wrote this to be a sense of, if I could do this without being prepared, without training, without having any language skills, with, you know, for all intents and purposes, seeming like the wrong person to be doing this, and could still do it and could still really appreciate it and enjoy it, and I wasn't suffering, then what kind of adventure could the reader find? What kind of journey would appeal to them? I wanted the reader to see themselves there. I wanted someone to be able to imagine what it would be like when they say, oh, I could never do something like that. Well, you know what? Maybe you could. Or maybe it's not this. Maybe it's not 1,000 miles across Europe, but maybe it is the Appalachian Trail. It is a long distance through trail in the United States. Or maybe it's, you know, 2 weeks exploring the Mayan ruins, or whatever is appealing. Don't be scared to try it. Don't let those initial feelings of, oh, this isn't the kind of thing that I do, hold you back.
That was Beth Jacino. In addition to doing her own writing, she also works with others to develop and share their stories. Her book about the Camino is called Walking to the End of the World, and we've got a link to that on our website, outtherepodcast.com. Thank you to Julia Drachman for helping us record Beth's interview. Julia has a podcast of her own called Going Forward, which focuses on stories about problem solving and designing a better future for the planet. Before you go, if you're enjoying the show, I would love for you to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Out There. It only takes a minute, and it's an easy way for you to support this podcast without spending any money. Speaking of money, a big thank you to Allison Heapsch, Phil Tim, Walter Mugden, and Vivian Lenk for their financial contributions to Out There.
Finally, I wanted to let you know that we have some brand new Out There merchandise, including baby onesies. They have our logo on the front, and they are, without a doubt, the cutest thing we sell. You can get some for the little ones in your life by going to outtherepodcast.com and clicking on the merch tab. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Eggerking. Laura Johnston heads up our ambassador program, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and in the meantime, have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.